from God and the call off you to your neighbor. God calls us to follow him, to receive Jesus Christ and to walk in his ways. His call of us is to lean into the work that he's already begun, that he's already doing in the world. Both of these calls come through the work, the life, and the teaching of Jesus as they're embedded in our hearts. Let's just have a quick look back at what we've thought about the last few weeks. We heard the Magi received a sign and then found the Christ, the baby. And it reminds us that we need to be seeking out signposts in our own lives and following where God leads us. Then we heard about being encouraged to seek to discern the difference between the call of God and the pressures of this world. Next, in week 3, it was about the Lord Jesus choosing his disciples and calling them to follow him, making them fishers of men, if you remember. We were encouraged to rejoice in our own salvation and then to reach out to others with this great good news. And today, oh yeah, and then it was Tony. Sorry, Tony, I almost forgot yours. Tony touched on the idea that we need to set our expectations and desires to one side and seek after the plans of Christ. Today, we're going to look at Jesus' attitude to the Sabbath and to recognize that the commands of God have been set in place for our benefit and our protection. We're to take time to rest in him and to bring these promises to others, other people who might need him and need to know what he can bring into their lives. I've always been a bit struck that the Ten Commandments can be read in two completely different ways. They can be read as though they were a threat or as a promise. Promise of well-being for us and the societies in which we live. So let's have a quick look through those commandments, because the Sabbath is obviously one of those, and ask why God would issue each of these rules and why it's so much better to follow his call and his command. So the first one is, I am the Lord your God. You shall not have strange gods before me. You shall not make to yourself any graven thing or the likeness of anything that is in heaven above or the earth beneath, nor of those things that are in the waters under the earth. You shall not adore them nor serve them. Well, this could be read in a fairly far wide-ranging sort of way, but in a way, to me, just reading it at its face value, it feels like, well, to do anything but this would seem a bit daft, really. I mean, you know, we know and worship the real and living God. Why would we go out of our way to, you know, worship anything else? Of course, we're easily deflected, aren't we? Some of us, you know, worship our computers or our cars or something. But in essence, it's a no-brainer. Then it says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And my thinking is, well, fair enough. I don't like my name being used a bit against me. Why should God think that was okay? It's perfectly good to get into the habit of not using God's name in vain. Then there's, of course, remember to keep the Sabbath day holy, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. And then one of my favorites, I particularly like this one. I like to say it like this to my children. Honor your father and mother if you want to live long in the land. Yeah, but being serious, fortunately they did laugh. They thought it was funny as well, usually. But actually, it is true, isn't it? Honoring one another, whether it's our fathers or mothers, whether it's our bosses, and actually honoring our children, to be fair, is something that really is so important within the context of our lives. Then we've got do not kill. That seems fairly reasonable. To be honest, when people are involved in killing, as we know, it usually does some pretty serious damage to their own psyche, as well as destroying well-being, and of course it harms society. Children lose their parents, parents lose their children. All sorts of harm comes, and God's healing needs to come into those situations. The damage is huge and horrendous. Do not commit adultery. I don't know if this is the same today, but I remember having discussions about this when I was at college, studying architecture. People thought that God was just being a spoilsport, you know? What sex got to do with him anyway? But actually, I've never really understood that. That actually, when you look around the world, it seems to me that an awful lot of misery and sadness is caused by the breakup, the needless breakup of marriage. The damage done to the children, the undermining of family values and all sorts. Of course, this is not the same as marriages breaking up because one partner is bullying, abusive, miserable, and jealous. That we're not talking about that. I'm talking about adultery, where people just go off with somebody else. Then there's do not steal. Well, God knows that theft and the erosion of trust that this engenders is really harmful. I don't know if you've had your home broken into, but it has a funny effect on you, and I think it has a particularly nasty effect on children. Our home was broken into, and they took almost everything that belonged to my oldest son. I don't know why. Maybe he had all the best gear. But he did cope pretty well, but it was a bit horrible. Suddenly, all his stuff had gone, his bike, his ghetto blaster, stuff like that. This was a while ago, as you can imagine. It's important, isn't it? Then there is do not bear false witness against your neighbor. To lie about anyone or anything damages both the liar and the lied to. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Well, obviously that's not going to be good for neighborliness, is it? Coveting your neighbor's wife. Enough said. And then, finally, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. And I kind of equate this a bit with keeping up with the Joneses, where you feel like because of the society you mix with and the people you live close to and stuff like that, that you're kind of feeling under pressure to be a particular way. I don't think it's good for anybody, and it often pulls people to spend much more money than they have. Actually, we're supposed to be prioritizing the kingdom stuff, the things that are important to God. So it feels to me like all these things are actually to protect us and to protect other people. They're not bad things. They're not restrictive in the sense that they're asking you to not do things that actually would be good for you. These make total sense to me. So let's come back and look at the passage from Mark. Jesus has realized that the Pharisees have been... Oh, there's the keeping up with the neighbors. Sorry, I forgot to click that one. Jesus has realized that the Pharisees have used the law to bind themselves and others rather than using it to the benefit of society and individuals. So they were taking the law, the Ten Commandments and a whole lot of other stuff, and they were using it to actually make life an awful lot harder, particularly for the poor. Jesus is appalled. He understands that the commands of God are supposed to be freeing. They're supposed to make things better. They're there to keep us safe. They're a display of the love of God, who wants the very best for everybody. And in this case, they're being used by the clever folks, the learned, to make life harder for the poor, the sick, and the suffering. And Jesus won't stand for it. We heard that in this lesson. So he stands against it. And he takes the wonderful concept of the Sabbath to make his point. Picking heads of grain as you wander along certainly couldn't be construed as work. You might, if you were the farmer, think it was theft if you were taking a whole lot of grain out of your field, but I don't think they were. I suspect they were just taking it from the margins. That was actually something that was allowed. The learned Pharisees showed themselves to be what they are, petty, rule-bound, and in a way, out of touch. Now, as some of you will know, I've got a bit of a soft spot for the Pharisees. They might have been a bit of a tricky lot, but actually, the movement that they started has started quite a number of years previously, and it had actually been a good thing. It had been there to try and improve the understanding of the people's the societies keep them in touch with the Word of God. But it had just gone far too far, and they'd forgotten what it was all about and just made it into a set of very strict rules, which made it very hard for everybody. It just got out of hand. God's commands had disappeared behind some sort of wall of superstition, and had become just a weird code. Now, you know, I like rules as much as the next person. Well, actually, possibly considerably more than the next person. I'm really fond of rules. They make me feel like I know how the world works. In fact, I like to make up a few rules for myself so that I can be more efficient or something, like how to stack the dishwasher. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there is bound to be an optimum way of stacking a dishwasher. So you set up a set of rules, and then other people don't seem to follow them. It confuses me completely. But equally, I have a bit of a tendency to treat some rules as though they were guidance. Now, that may be okay-ish in some things, but when it comes to the speed limit, it's not one of those things that can be taken just sort of for granted. It's just guidance. It's all right. It doesn't matter if I exceed the speed limit. No. I've eventually, and I have been around for a lot, as you know, a long time, eventually sorted out that really I do need to stick to the speed limit or something pretty close to it. So these days I've made a significant effort to stay as close to the speed limit as I can. In fact, I even set the little speed limiter on my car to try and keep me to the right speed so that I can keep the public, my passengers, and even me, safer. So rules are good, but not when we use them as a weapon, or particularly not as we use them as a way of belittling other people. Rules need balance. They need to be interpreted for the time and the technology in which we live. And Jesus calls us to obey. He doesn't say we shouldn't have Sabbath rest. That's not what he's on here. But with this passage, he shows us that obedience needs to be in some sort of context. He knows that the third commandment is about the Sabbath. But within that context of healing a sick person or snacking on grains of wheat, then it's just taking the rule far too far. And the trouble is, actually, it's simplistic, isn't it? We can just take our unthinking obedience to a particular rule or code and just say, well, that's it. No breaking of these rules. And then you can criticize other people for doing so, can't you? No, it's not quite fun. But there are times, actually, when breaking the rule needs to be done. Take the speed limit, for instance. I really want the ambulance to exceed the speed limit if it's taking somebody I know to hospital. In fact, I actually want it to exceed the speed limit if it's taking anybody in an emergency to hospital. I'm happy for it to do that. It's okay. You know, if I hear it coming and I'm on my bike, I'll be off the road onto the pavement, getting out of the way, partly so I don't get run down by all the motorists who are looking in their mirrors. I want to be out of the way. If I'm in the car, I'll find a good place to stop and let it past. It might even be on a yellow line, but it's okay. You've got to be careful. All the highway code doesn't disappear because you're being followed by an ambulance, but you can take suitable precautions. I think it actually specifically says in the highway code, do not drive onto the pavement just because you're getting out of the way of an ambulance. Can't quite remember. Do you know there's a new version of the highway code out? Anybody seen that? Yeah. Jenny told me this morning. I better read it. I think it's to protect us cyclists, though. That's good. Anyway, I'm getting diverted. So it's just fine. In some cases, we've got to be a bit flexible. But the Pharisees just couldn't see that this was okay. Healing on the Sabbath broke their rule, and that was that. No ifs, no buts. It was wrong. And I do feel the church has at times fallen into that trap. They've decided that actually you couldn't have exceptions, because in a way it's easy. We've at times been unwilling to move with the time. We've taken God's commands and applied them without taking into account God's great love and his grace. Our obedience needs to be like the obedience of Jesus, self-sacrificial and well-considered. It needs to be applicable for our time, our culture. It's not an easy route. It needs to be hard. It needs to be thought through obedience that's relevant to where we are and what we're doing. Let me give you an example. Examples are good. A long time ago, I went to a tiny little church in the middle of Oldham. They were very excited because a young lady, a mum of four children, had just become a Christian around the time we arrived. She was lovely. But she was not married to the man that she lived with. But he was the father of her children. The church elders tried to insist that she should leave him because she was not married to him. Jenny and I were baffled by this idea. It seemed utterly absurd. But you can see where they'd got it from. Just weren't applying it into their time and place and culture. This would have been a terrible thing. She needed her man. Her children needed her man. The whole thing was a mess and a muddle because of the desire to follow the rules but not follow the heart of God. Jesus calls us to obedience. There is no doubt about that. But it's obedience that needs to be thoroughly considered. It needs to, at its foundation, have God's love and his grace. And it needs to be founded on not condemning others or judging them. God is the judge. I mean, he's good at that. That is part of his job. He's also good at love and grace. We're called to lives of acceptance, of love, and obedience. So finally, what about the Sabbath? Yeah, I might get to the point at this point. Well, I think I've been through a few points, actually, but yeah. How do we apply the command of the Sabbath into our own lives? Well, obviously, I'm the wrong person to ask. Yeah, it's not easy, is it? How do we achieve the balance that the command requires? You know, I love being busy. I'm sort of like a busyness addict. You know, I find it really difficult to calm down. So I think, yes, I'll do it. Oh, hang on. No, I can't do all those things. But actually, I usually find I've volunteered for something else, and then I don't do it very well because I just love being busy. So I'm not probably the best person to give advice on following Sabbath rest. But then that was probably one of the reasons why God set that command in stone. Because we all do need to consider how we're going to do this. Get balance in our lives so we have busyness, so we have times of service, so we have times of energy, and then time to recuperate. So I try to make it my vague rule, don't always stick to it, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that I don't make money or spend money on a Sunday. Doesn't always work. Pretty well managed not to do work that I might get paid for on a Sunday. But clearly, standing up here at the moment isn't really restful. Certainly before the service, I was quite nervous. I'm okay now because I get on a roll. Thank you, Lord. But clearly, I'm not resting when I'm standing here. I'm not resting, really, when I'm at the sound desk for the couple of hours before service, then the service. I'm loving it, you know. I'm absolutely loving it when I'm on the sound desk. You know, you can sack me from everything else, but can I just keep working on the sound desk forever? Because I feel just inspired to serve that way. But it's not restful. And then, of course, there's Maxine streaming onto Facebook. I don't think you're working very hard, Maxine, but nevertheless, you do have to remain focused. And if anybody'd like to join our little Facebook streaming team, do talk to myself or Maxine about it. It's lovely to be here on a Sunday, even if I'm up here at the front on the sound desk or just sitting in the congregation. But I do need to remember to get some rest. And we all do. We need to find that balance, the way of getting that balance. We need to find a way of being energized for the rest of the time, but having time to rest and take on board a bit of peace in our lives. So rather than giving you any guidance, because I think it's got to be different for each of us, apart from to say we do need to do it, I just want to read to you what it says about the Sabbath day. It doesn't have to be a Sunday. It doesn't have to be any particular day, so long as it is a day, a time to refresh yourself, to be in God's presence. How will you fulfill this commandment? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. That's quite serious, isn't it? It's a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shan't do any work, neither you, your son, your daughter, your male or female servant, nor your animals or any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. How are you going to be blessed and bless God by having some Sabbath rest?